Someone in something else. I don't know what to
Love
do with it.
Talk radio.
Here we go.
Never let that man have coffee. Good evening and welcome to wherever we are. I believe it's Erie House Oldie Timey Radio. Yeah, it's Friday night. That's exactly what it is. I am Dale Kay from Spook Show, no less. And I'm accompanied by...
I tried to slip him some decaf. He wouldn't take it. Dave Bickner from Weirdness Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One. I'm here with Coffee Man. This other guy.
Prehensile. No, it is I, Guy of the Gold, Blade Fuel.
Now, see, I got to edit that out after we're done tonight. You said the word.
Well, you know, but if you say the translation for that word, it gets through the censors. But if you say the word itself, it doesn't, because translated, it means Ernest Borgnine.
Prehensile.
Oh, there you go. We'll see who the true madman is tonight. I'm going to try to do the remainder of the show sans cigarettes.
Oh. I thought he was going to say in his boxers, but no, he gets sand cigarettes.
This is not easy for me. I'm usually good for a half a pack during a show. I kid you not. And what?
Okay,
it's
but
like
if
two and a half hours.
You knock me for the coffee and you're sitting here kicking back a pack and a half? My gosh. Blah, blah.
That's what kept my feet on the ground. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, but
you're in for trouble.
But cigarettes only cause cancer. All that coffee causes hilarity.
Yeah. Well, we're actually on the Goulet tonight.
Oh.
Oh, good.
Which
heaven.
Is still caffeine. It's still a caffeinated beverage with a prehensile tail.
Goulet is like the Red Bull of horror host and radio host land.
Yeah, well, I do it again. It's got the black tea in it, and it's got all sorts of other things swimming around in there. I don't know. It goes down easy.
I got to tell you, we had a thread going on last night between the three of us on the Facebook. And Gar, I have to admit to you.
Was I there?
You quickly wrote off one of the funniest lines. I'll be stealing that for one of my shows down the road.
Okay.
You wrote down, if we were paid in towels, we'd have to throw them in. I just thought that was hilarious. That was hilarious.
I am honored.
if we were paid in towels, we'd throw it in.
We'd throw it in. That's right.
All
there we go. Supposing we got paid again.
All this madness and a whole lot of radio, too. In fact, we...
whole lot of radio.
It's
all about
June,
loose women.
Right? We flipped a page on the calendar. It's June now. And what happens in June? Well, historically, a lot of young ladies and young men get married to each other, even.
My notes say loose women. What? Oh, they're getting married. Oh, never mind. No.
Hence the term June Bride. And that's exactly what we're doing celebrating a little bit by sharing some radio tales about brides.
Yeah, but these aren't normal June brides. These are June brides coming to us from the weird circle, Inner Sanctum Mysteries and Murder at Midnight.
Yeah, and that's why I used that little Bride of Frankenstein ad I created to kind of lure you into the motif, if you will, of our particular June brides. We are, after all, Erie House.
I thought that was hilarious, Dale. I really did. I saw that out there with the Bride of Frankenstein. Yep.
It absolutely slays me that Murder at Midnight, the best-sounding radio intro ever, only aired at 10:30. What the heck?
And Gar, you brought up something real good while we were warming up for tonight's show that I thought is worth sharing. And we might as well start with Murder at Midnight. You brought up an interesting story about your research into the original broadcast date.
Yes, I did.
Lassie. All right. Lassie, come home. Lassie, come to Earth.
What I found out is I need my glasses. No, what I found out is... okay. I just read it. I just looked at it. Murder at Midnight. Where are you? Oh, here we go. Oh, okay. All right. There we go. So I ended up with three different sources. The DigitalDeli.com, the Library of Congress, good luck, and Wikipedia. And what we ended up with was a production date of June 11th, 1946. And that was according to the Library of Congress. And then we have adverts from WJZ, a radio station that may or may not still be in operation out of New York, with an advert out of the New York Times. And they did an air date of December 9th, 1946. So the production date was July. It was June and July, and yet they have an air date for December in the New York Times. So there you go. A whole lot of information you can find out about these amazing radio programs and Goulet and Prehensile Tales, all on the Internet if you go looking.
Yep, and it sounds like you did a lot. We appreciate that.
WJZ, I believe, is still around. It was... WJZ AM 1300 AM licensed to Baltimore, Maryland, and also was known as WABC AM in New York, so which used the call sign WJZ.
Wow.
So it was WABC AM 700 AM.
That's outstanding. That it's still around. So we're talking 60, 70, 80 years.
Yeah.
Roughly. Yeah. I'm no mathematician. Well, I could be if you know, give me $5. Sure. You know.
It was WJZ from 1921 to 1953.
Wow.
There we go.
See, that's crazy. And some of the older radio shows and programs were on these radio stations that were they're just so ancient. It's amazing how long the longevity of these things.
Yeah, just think WJZ started 100 years ago this year. 100 years ago.
Wow. I was 10.
And alive.
And I had Goulet.
Yeah.
There you go. As Gar mentioned, one of the greatest intros in all of radio dumb from Murder at Midnight. This one's called Till Death Do Us Part. And let's give that production date. That's probably the earliest date we've got.
Well, okay.
One
the production
time.
Date goes back June. Blah, 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 where are you? June 11th, 1946.
Murder at Midnight.
So lovely, everything about you, your eyes, your lips, your lovely white throat. I can feel it pulsing under my hands, throbbing.
No, Frank, you're hurting me. You're choking me. No!
Midnight, the witching hour when the night is darkest, our fears the strongest, and our strength at its lowest ebb. Midnight, when the graves gape open and death strikes. How? You'll learn the answer in just a minute in Till Death Do Us Part.
Thank you. Murder at Midnight. Tales of Mystery and Terror by Radio's Masters of the Macabre. Our story by Joseph Ruskell is Till Death Do Us Part.
I never saw a man who looked with such a wistful eye upon that little tint of blue which prisoners call the sky.
Ruth, I want to tell you something. Put down that book and listen. I love you.
Some too long. Some sell and others buy. Some do the deed with many tears and some without a sigh.
You hear me, Ruth? I love you.
Some do it with a bitter look. Some with a flattering word.
Professor Clark.
Yes, Professor Clark.
Love me, darling.
Wildly?
Put the book away. Almost there now. Bridal suite waiting.
Oh, Frank. Promise you'll always love me.
Till death do us part. Another glass, darling. Come on.
It's sweet to dance the violins when love and life are fair. To dance to flute, to dance to lute is delicate and rare.
But it is not so sweet with nimble feet to...
To dance upon the air. Frank.
Darling.
You've hardly kissed me. Why are you looking at me like that?
You're so lovely.
Come over here to the couch. A shy bridegroom in this day and age? Darling, why are you acting so strangely? Well, if the mountain won't come to Mohammed... Come here, my lord and master. Kiss me.
Oh, Ruth, I love you so.
Darling, why do you keep staring at me like that? Frank!
Ruth, no.
Darling, what's the matter?
I don't know.
Please, Frank, after all...
No, don't come near me. Don't touch me. Ruth, something terrible is happening to me. It's a feeling... It's too dreadful to believe.
What is it?
When I take you in my arms, when I kiss you, I love you and I want you so that I feel a hideous urge to...
To what, darling?
To strangle you to death.
Darling?
Hmm?
Hurry, dear. The waiter just brought in breakfast. What are you doing?
Shaving. Finishing up now. Morning, Professor.
Morning, Professor. Life is wonderful.
Wonderful.
How?
Thank you.
Leave us enter the parlor, husband.
Yes. Leave us eat, my bride. Ah! What feast is this that tempts my palate? Fall to, spouse. Citrus! My favorite ice squirt. I'm so happy I feel like dancing.
It's sweet to dance to violin.
Yeah, that's right. How's it go? It's sweet to dance to violin.
When love and life are fair. Eat, dear. What's wrong?
I guess I'm not very hungry.
Frank, you're thinking of that incident last night again. You are, aren't you?
How could I have said that to you? I can't understand it. What got into me?
Now, darling, you're to forget it. Don't talk about it anymore. Don't even think of it. It was just your little joke.
Some joke. Wonder I didn't frighten you to death.
Well.
The funny thing is, the next minute I was laughing at myself, and so were you. But when I said it, I... Ruth, I can't explain it. I can't eat now.
Frank.
It was like an obsession. Yes, that's it. It was an obsession. Ruth, you're a psychologist. What does it mean? To have felt that horrible urge to do that to you. To you, I must have been mad.
Now, darling, don't say that. Don't spoil our honeymoon with this nonsense. You'll be talking things into yourself. I don't know what it is. Your nerves are on edge from your accident, that terrible crash just 3 months ago.
Please, Ruth, please, I don't want to think about it. I can still see it, that horrible, twisted wreckage.
Well, you're lucky you're alive. Be thankful, I am.
She was hitting 80, showing off. I couldn't stop her, that daffy little sister of yours.
Darling.
I'm sorry, dear. I'm sorry. I dare say I felt as awful about it as you did. Brilliant student, could have been one of my best if she'd ever opened a book. The poor kid, what a way to die. Maybe if I hadn't accepted a lift to town, who knows, she might still
now
be...
Now, please, please, darling, let's forget it. It's not good for you. You haven't been at all yourself ever since then.
No, I haven't, have I?
Well, everything has its compensation, dear. After all, that's what brought us together. Closely, I mean.
Yes, that's right. In the hospital, what... You were an angel.
Oh.
Well, you were just an angel from heaven, the way you helped to nurse me through all that time when I was only half conscious. Nursed me and read to me. Yes, the way you read to me.
Why do you say it like that, Frank?
Well, I don't know. There's something you read to me over and over when I was barely conscious. I've heard it ever since, deep down. I can't seem to recall it, but I feel that it had something to do with my crazy behavior last night. A line. It's still with me. It never seems to leave me. It seems to make me want to do something horrible.
Now, Frank, stop talking. You're ill again. You're pale as a ghost.
What was that line? I've got to know.
Please, darling, please stop shouting. I'm with you. Your love is with you. Now kiss me, dear. Hold me tight.
Oh, so lovely. Everything about you. Your eyes, your lips, your lovely white throat. I feel it pulsing. I can feel your throat pulsing, darling, in my hands. Pulsing.
No, Frank. You're hurting me. Oh, you're choking me. No!
Yes, sir? I'm checking out. Room number 438. Call me a cab.
From the bridal suite?
Well, just a moment. Is something wrong, sir? You and your wife just checked in last night. Any complaint?
No complaint. Just call me a cab.
Oh, an emergency.
What business is it of yours? Where's another hotel?
Why, you'll find it very difficult in New York without a reservation. And if you and your wife...
I'm checking out. Who said anything about my wife? She's better off without me, do you hear? Well, what are you gawking at? She's very lovely, remember? Would she make a nice corpse in a bridal suite? Oh, go to the devil.
Where to now, mister? Where now?
Just shake off that other cab.
I did. 3 hours ago. I told you 10 times. What now?
Just drive around the park.
We've been around and around and around. How long can this go on?
That line. What was that line? What was it?
Huh?
What was that line?
Look, pal, we going over that again, too? What line? You want the 7th Avenue line? If I'm not talking out of turn, but you must have lifted quite a few today.
Get me to a hotel.
We tried a dozen. Remember, they're full up. Hey, just who are you, mister? What's your racket?
What's that to you?
Okay, I just asked.
I was a teacher, cabby, in a woman's college. But that's only a blind. My name is Jack the Ripper, see? But some people just call me Bluebeard.
Bluebeard? Huh? This is the end of my line, chum. Pay up and get out.
No, I won't. You can't make me get out. You can't.
I can't, huh?
No, because if I do get out, I may go back. And if I go back, don't you understand? I'll kill her.
For richer, for poorer, in sickness and in health, till death do us part. A bridegroom, dazed and obsessed, standing on a city street, fearing to return to his bride, because he knows if he does, it will mean...
Murder at midnight.
And now, back to Murder at Midnight and Till Death Do Us Part.
Yes? What do you want?
Good evening, sir. My name is Bluebeard. You're the proprietor of this charming boarding house.
You're drunk.
Forsooth, it's true. May I tarry the night?
No vacancies. Go on now, get on your way.
Yeah, we'll return to Till Death Do Us Part shortly. Want to thank everyone for stopping in live. CW, Linda Lou, Fogsbane, GGS, I Paper, Rob Smith Jr., and a host of others we can't see.
Invisible. They're invisible.
Invisible people.
Ooh. You know, this series was directed by Anton M. Leader, which is Morris, so he didn't like Morris, so he called it M. Anyway, he also directed 2 years of suspense. I think it was from 1948 to 1950 as well, every week there. He actually is one guy that didn't mind moving into television. He only ever did one movie. We'll get to that in a second. But he did episodes of, if you go on early, starting with The Web from 1954. He did two episodes of Man Behind the Badge, Damon Runyon Theater, 5 episodes, Celebrity Playhouse, 8 episodes, 4-Star Playhouse, 2 episodes. Yeah, keep going up there. Things that we would recognize. I'll just keep moving up there as we recognize. Of course, The Adventures of Jim Bowie, he did 14 episodes of that. Zane Grey Theater or Bold Venture, the TV series, 5. So Sea Hunt. Sea Hunt,
the
4 knife. Episodes.
Not the singer.
The Bowie. The Twilight Zone, he did 2 episodes, The Midnight Sun, which was a cool episode, and one with Kevin McCarthy, who played Sherlock Holmes for us last weekend, Long Live Walter Jameson. I think it was the only episode that he appeared in Twilight Zone.
Dave, are we talking about Louis G. Cowens,
Anton M. Leader. He was the director of this.
Director, copyright, not the owner.
2 episodes of Leave It to Beaver, 01 series, not familiar with that one, 5 episodes of that, 4 episodes of Rawhide, Dale, 2 episodes of Lost in Space,
Yay!
Island in the Sky and The Reluctant Stowaway.
That's the first episode, The Reluctant Stowaway.
Okay. 6 episodes of Gilligan's Island. And 1 episode of I Spy. It is 1 episode of It's About Time. 3 episodes of the 1967 Tarzan series. He did 1 episode of Mr. Terrific. He did 1 episode of Star Trek, the original series. Ooh. For the World is Hollow and I Have Touched the Sky. an episode of It Takes the Thief.
I think Jimi Hendrix was in that.
Was he? Okay.
Yeah, that's just
8 episodes of Ironside, 2 episodes of Get Smart, would you believe? 14 episodes of Virginia. Okay, here's the second movie. I missed this. He had 3 episodes of the original Hawaii 5-0. The 2 movies he did, The Cockeyed Cowboys of Calico County, and the other movie he did. Come on, I know. I just saw it. I know it would be one that would interest you. Oh, there it is. Children of the Damned.
Ernest Borgnine on Ice. No.
Children of the Damned. And the last thing he directed was from 1976, an episode of Moving On, which starred Claude Akins as a truck driver.
Now I'm seeing a parallel here, Dave. This guy has a resume just like mine.
He does.
Yeah, it's like one off everywhere, you know. Well, he did it here. He was over there. He's all over the place.
Some great remarks on
ice.
Great remarks in the chat, guys. Keaton Compton.
Uh huh.
We've all directed 5 episodes of Gilligan's Island at one time or another.
Oh my!
In your dreams, there, Smith guy.
There was a funny episode of Pinky and the Brain, the cartoon Pinky and the Brain, where the Brain, you know, being a mundane kind of a guy, he mentioned, I finally brought myself to watch that Gilligan's Island, and I happened to see the one where Gilligan messed it up for everyone at the end. And the other mouse goes, I never saw that one.
That's only like every episode,
yes.
Pinky, what are we going to do tonight?
Same thing we do every night.
Yes,
Pinky.
We're going to take
over
the
world. And the guy who did the voice did such a great Orson Welles. It was like the voice of Orson Welles.
It was just perfect.
Yes.
And what do they call that? The guilty pleasure type thing is, you know, I was in my 20s sitting there, you know, waiting for Pinky and the Brain to come on. Like, great stuff. Or maybe my 30s. I don't know. I don't remember when it came on.
Probably 30s, because that would be the 90s that show was on. I remember because my kids were small, and I hatched it on that.
Yeah. It was Pinky and the Brain, and that was one step away from Ren. No, Pinky and the Brain, and then the next evolutionary step in weird stuff to watch was Ren and Stimpy, which was just crazy.
What is it, man? What is it, man?
I don't know, but there's certain things you should never do on an electric fence, and we'll leave it at that all because none of this has anything to do at all with Murder at Midnight. So let's continue with part two.
Keep your G's to yourself over there.
Where is this room? Top floor, rear, Mrs. Clark. He came in about an hour ago, drunk as you please, and he asked for a single. I'm not one to rent to drunks, mind you, but I can see he's really educated. And a gentleman, though a queer one, if you ask me, with his eyes all bloodshot. Well, here it is.
Did he say when he'll be back?
He said he was going for his bags.
I'll just wait in his room, if you don't mind.
Hmm.
It's all right. I'm his wife, I tell you.
Well, I don't know. Something mighty fishy about all this. And excuse me, there's the hall phone. It's not one thing, it's another. All right, all right. Hello? Yes? Who? Who? Oh, just a minute. It's him, ma'am. He wants to talk to the lady who just came in.
Let me speak to him. Hello, Frank.
I saw you go in. What are you doing in my house?
Darling, it's so good to hear your voice again. I was so worried.
Answer me. What are you doing there? How did you know where to find me?
I've been following you everywhere. I don't want you to leave me, darling. I love you.
Get out of there. Stop haunting me. I'm no good for you. Haven't you had enough? Go away.
I won't. You need me. I'm your wife. Come back to me, Frank.
Come back? How can you still want me? What are you inviting? Why don't you take a train home? Do you want to die? You know I'll kill you the next time we're alone. You know I've gone mad.
Now, don't say that. You're just ill, and I'll nurse you back to health. Oh, Frank, this is your wife talking. What sort of spineless thing do you suppose you've married? What would you have me do, run to the police and ask them to protect me from my husband? Run to the police and cry that the man I love wants to kill me? Run to the police and
kill him? That's right. Of course. Why didn't I think of that before?
No, Frank. Frank. Frank, what are you going to do?
Have a seat, Mrs. Clark.
What is it you want of me, Inspector Wade? Why was I called here to the police station?
You've no idea?
No. Oh. Is he here, my husband? He told you?
But I thought he was just drunk.
Oh, I told him not to come here. I told him not to.
Then it's all true? This beats anything I've ever heard. Man loves wife so much, he wants to strangle her. Kisses her. Gets an irresistible yen to choke her to death. And on their honeymoon. You want to prefer charges?
Prefer charges? What for?
Well, attempted homicide ought to cover it.
I won't. He's my husband. I love him. I'll stick by him no matter what.
But he ought to at least be sent to Bellevue for a mental...
Oh, no, you won't. There's nothing mentally wrong with Frank. Nothing at all. It's simply nerves, the result of an accident he had recently.
This really takes the cake. Mrs. Clark, another thing that puzzles me...
Yes?
He kept raving about a line when he staggered in here, as if it were life or death. A line of poetry he couldn't remember. Wanted me to tell him what it was. Confidentially, I've only read one poem in my life. Now, what's that all about?
I haven't the vaguest notion, Inspector. Just part of his neurotic state, I suppose. When we get back to our hotel room...
What? You want him back after what happened?
Yes. Don't you see, I must cure him of that awful obsession. Who else can do it but me? I'd like to see him now, Inspector. Please release him to me. I'll take the consequences.
He's not here.
Not here?
No. We held him overnight just to let him sober up like we would any other drunk. Thought it was just all boozy eyewash. Well, this morning he seemed a new man, laughed it all off. So we released him. Just a few minutes ago.
Oh, wonderful.
But then I had a hunch I ought to warn you anyway. Just a hunch.
Warn me?
Yeah. He said he was going to call on you tonight at the hotel for a little reunion.
Oh, how marvelous. Maybe he's all cured.
I don't know. I didn't like the way he smiled when he said it. Mrs. Clark, after what you just told me, I think I ought to have him picked up again.
You'll do no such thing.
It's taking your life in your hands. I think he's got wheels in his head.
I don't care. I love him.
You die just as dead when you're in love.
I'm not afraid. I'll never leave him. Certainly not now when he needs me more than ever. Is that all, Inspector?
Okay, lady. You're 14 carat. He sure doesn't deserve a wife like you. And don't say I didn't warn you. It's your funeral.
Thank you, Inspector. Goodbye.
Oh, Mrs. Clark, there's one more thing perhaps I ought to tell you.
Yes?
When I released him just a while ago, he said something else that puzzled me. That being in jail had suddenly given him revelation. He smiled very queerly when he said it.
Oh?
I think maybe he found that line of poetry, Mrs. Clark.
Hello?
Ruth?
Where are you, Frank?
In the lobby.
Come up.
I don't know exactly what your game is, my sweet bride, but I'm warning you. I've had a revelation.
I know. It's high time.
I'm going to finish it, Ruth, this time. You asked for it.
Come up, Frank.
Sure?
Sure.
Your funeral.
A coward does it with a kiss. Come in, Frank. The door's open.
Throwing a party, my dear?
Yes.
Who's invited?
You and I.
What are we celebrating?
An uninvited guest at our honeymoon. Guest has come with you, hasn't it, this time?
Yes.
Shall we drink to him?
Why not?
Do you still love me, Frank?
Yes, I still love you. But I love you better when you're dead for what you've done.
How much do you know?
Not enough. It came to me in jail last night. The jail had something to do with it. How, I still don't know, but enough to make me remember something you whispered in the hospital when I was just coming to. You said, I'll get my revenge, Frank. Do you hear me? I'll get my revenge.
Splendid. A, from memory. What else?
Enough to make me realize that you hate me and have always hated me, although you pretended otherwise.
Brilliant. Say loved and hated you. Go on.
And that somehow, I don't know myself in what way, but I'm sure it must be a very clever way, as your psychology students would agree. You've been coldly, deliberately torturing me, trying to make me think myself a maniac, or have others think so.
Close enough.
Why, what I can't understand is why you did it or why you weren't afraid that I'd really murder you.
You'll soon find out.
And I'm convinced now that you've done it all with a single line. A single line of poetry. In my jail cell, I was sure of it. The very walls seemed to tell me, I don't know why, that it was a line that you kept reading to me at the hospital. Over and over and over again, that made me think I wanted to kill you.
And what was that line?
That's what I'm going to find out.
right now.
Don't come any closer, Professor.
You know, it's perfectly ridiculous. Looking at you now, close to you, where I can almost touch you, that crazy obsession is still with me. I laugh at it intellectually. I know that you've tricked me into it by some very obvious power of suggestion, but I still feel that way.
Don't come any nearer. I'm warning you.
Isn't it eerie? I still love you and can strangle you for my love. And will.
Stay where you are. You're not going to kill me, darling. I'm going to kill you. Now do you see why I wasn't afraid of you?
That gun. You've had it all the time.
Correct, my love. Right here in the wine table drawer. I've planned this all along, Angel, from the very first. Before we were even married, yes, your intuition was right. From the day you and my little sister were brought to the hospital after the accident. From the day she died, and the doctor said you'd pull through. I planned it all. And it's worked out like a perfect equation every step of the way.
Why? Why?
I had to commit the perfect crime, and I've done it. Even the police will testify that it was self-defense against a homicidal maniac. And when they find you here with a bullet in your head, they'll congratulate me.
But what's this all? I still don't
understand. It had to be the perfect crime because I must go free. You see, one life has already paid for yours. And quart for quart, your blood is worth no more than my family.
I don't understand this at all. What did I ever do?
You killed my sister.
I killed her?
She told me before she left on that drive with you that she was going to crash the car. She left before I could stop her. She told me everything, Frank, including what you'd done to her.
Everything. I see. So that's it. Well, I don't suppose it would be of any use my trying to convince
you. No use. I've waited a long time for this moment. Revenge is sweet. And it was such fun to torture you. I used a weapon I knew. Of course, it was power of suggestion. Sure, you guessed it. But what a pity you don't know the line yet.
What was it? What was it? Tell me. Tell me. Don't keep me in torture.
Keep back. Think hard, Frank. Think all around it. What about a jail and the revelation it gave you? What about a famous poet who wrote a famous poem while in jail?
Why?
Yes, yes?
Oscar Wilde. That's it. Yes, that's it from Oscar Wilde, a ballad.
Of course, a ballad.
The Ballad of Reading Jail. How could it ever have escaped me? Why, you wit, you've even been reading from it on our honeymoon. But what part? What verse? What line? What was the line?
Don't take another step or I'll pull the trigger.
Give me the line, I say. I still can't think of the line.
Keep back or I'll shoot.
Oh, no, you won't.
One more step and I'll shoot.
Tell me that line or I'll kill you.
All men kill the thing they love. Remember, Frank?
How's the next line go, Mrs. Clark? By all, let this be heard. So I heard. Too bad I was a little late.
Inspector Wade.
You know, ma'am, like I said, I only read one poem in my whole life. But ain't it the darndest thing? It happened to be the Ballad of Reading Jail.
Honeymoon in the bridal suite. Red wine spilled on the table. And red blood on the floor as the clock strikes 12 for
murder at midnight.
Thank you. remember to be with us again when death's key turns in the lock and the clocks strike 12 for Murder at Midnight. The part of Professor Ruth Clark was played by Elspeth Eric. Professor Frank Clark by Eric Dressler. With music by Charles Paul, Murder at Midnight was directed by Anton M. Leader.
Oscar Wilde, really now, you know.
Yes. But the irony, yeah, that's one heck of a, that's a wild coin flip there, I got to tell you.
There you go. And Fogsbean, you hit the nail on the head. Awesome outro on that particular show. Murder at 10:30. I mean midnight.
Yeah. Well, a lot of, as Dave has explained previously, a lot of times they would fill time with the same organ chord over and over and over again, because yep. That's where you put in your advertisements for local stations.
Right. Ah,
and it had some different pluses. I still have that. I had a list there. No, maybe it was for the Weird Circle or such. But yeah, had a list of some unique sponsors for it, but. before my computer so rudely cut me off, I was talking about how I had only read one poem myself. I think it started like there was a young woman from Poughkeepsie, but I don't think we should go on at this point.
Yeah. Right.
Twinkle, twinkle, little star. Yeah, that one. I know that one.
My. This is getting to be a blue program here.
Actually,
let's move on.
Actually,
and learn something new and exciting and wholesome.
I did write a little.
Erie House Radio proudly insists upon Gar's moral of the story.
However not impossible, it's highly improbable that a one-armed man would make for a successful career strangler.
There you go.
Or,
hey,
if a poem is a blueprint, what are IKEA instructions? Okay, there you go.
IKEA directions never help. You know, as Fogsbane, I think he bought that. I do have a book out of nursery rhymes. You reminded me of this with your reference to Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star.
Well, yeah, and, I'm lost on that. Okay, go ahead.
But anyway, you know, what it is, usually the first stanza was the normal one that I'd go off on kind of a different kind of tangent as it went on. But for Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, it was something like, Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, I used to wonder what you are, but now I know from science class, you're just a fiery ball of gas. So
see, how did we go blue with that? I got lost.
No, that would be.
I just got nervous. I got nervous. Okay.
I don't know where Dale was going. Dale, hey, I have never opened creaking door of Dale's mind to find out what could be in there.
It's dark and scary.
When I first started, weirdness,
like a little stars in there.
No, when I first started the weirdness TV show. One of the early features on was a segment called Mod Mother Goose. And so I ended up putting together about 26 of these in a book that is available on Amazon.com. And Becky,
you're not selling, though, right?
I sell one about every 3.5 years. I sell one, yeah.
Hmm.
I think the last one I sold was Fogsbane. I think he bought one, yeah.
I know that there was something called Steve Allen's hip poetry, but that's not what it's called.
Bebop poetry or something like that.
Bop fables, that's it. Yeah.
Bop fables.
Oh, those
were
great.
Bop fables. I actually animated one of those. We used the little pigs, and I read it, and then I used the animation that's in the book, and I also animated some with some cartoons in there.
I got to see that, Gar. Yep. You sent me a copy of it some time ago.
I believe it's on the YouTubes. I don't put much on the YouTubes, but that's on there. And nobody's taken it down yet. So now I have been haunted by the ghost of Steve Allen.
Time. You'll offend someone.
Yeah.
There's time.
Yeah. There you go. Now I get haunted by the ghost of the Steve Allen going, "Why did you do that, sir?" I don't know, man.
Why did you do that to my pigs?
Why did you do that to my amazing little pigs?
Yes.
I don't know.
Because it was
I was just going to say,
so extraordinary. Talent for a guy who just looked like kind of a geek, Steve Allen. He was so extraordinary with picking talent to work around him and an amazing musician, and he composed like 1,000 songs, of which I'm not sure how many of them sold, but, you know, he just multi-talented. It's acting. He was Glenn Miller, I think, in the Glenn Miller story. This is an amazing a writer, producer. He did for PBS. I wish I'd bring it back. It was interesting what he did with a series called Meeting of the Minds, when you get these great minds from different times sitting around a table discussing different topics. I thought it was really was absolutely amazing to come from. And it all came from the brilliant mind of Steve Allen. And he was a game show host. I think he hosted at one point I've got a Secret. And so very talented.
Yes, he is. And we love playing his stuff here on Erie House Radio. June Brides tonight. Mm-hmm.
June Brides. June Brides.
Now, this is kind of a wacko bride. That first one, she usually they're the victims. Usually they're the victims, man. This time.
No, not in real life. Especially the first wife, who's the victim indeed.
Well,
the practice wife?
Yeah, yes. Practice wife, yep.
Yeah.
And all three of us have been there.
That's right. To Hades and back, as it were.
So where are we going now? To possibly a weird circle?
Why not? Why not? This is a good one. I love the title. Another creepy, eerie type title. The Spectre Bride.
Oh, January 21, 1945, I guess.
Sure.
Okay.
Let's get started.
The past, phantoms of a world gone by, speak again the immortal tale, The Spectre Bride.
But Mary, darling, tell me what's happened. You're trembling.
Oh, Charles, what are we going to do? I keep telling myself we live in a world that doesn't believe in ghosts. And yet, after the village clock strikes midnight, I know my sister's ghost will come again.
Your sister?
Yes, Josephine, my sister, whom you never knew.
No, I never heard you speak of her.
I would have told you someday. We were very close. We were twins, you see, identical twins. 3 weeks ago, one morning, an hour or so before dawn, I was sleepless. So I went for a walk in the South Garden down near the ancient chapel.
Where we'll be married tomorrow.
Can you see the bell tower from here? See, there in the moonlight?
Why, yes, I can see it.
In its shadows hangs the bell that's never tolled. That night I looked up in the tower, and there she stood, looking down at me solemnly. I was terrified. For a long time, we stared at one another. And then, suddenly, she was gone.
But I don't understand.
4 years ago, when she was 16, we found her body one morning beneath the bell tower. Her face was drawn with terror. And we never knew why she'd gone to the tower or why she'd fallen from it. It was on the eve of her marriage, just as tonight's the eve of ours.
Oh, my darling, is this all that frightens you? Believe me, it was only some illusion of the moonlight.
No, no, you see, I've seen her twice since then. 2 weeks ago tonight, she stood under the elms, just yonder, near the chapel. I saw her quite clearly as she walked down the path and disappeared in the darkness. For a time, I was so frightened I could hardly move. At last, I followed her. But before I reached the highway, the carriage drove away.
What carriage?
I don't know, Charles. I don't know. It's so hard for me to tell you this. It's like a terrible dream haunting me every minute that keeps warning me and warning me. And I'm frightened because I don't know what to do.
Oh, there's nothing to fear now. Nothing at all.
Then a week ago tonight, soon after the village clock struck midnight, I saw her a third time from my bedroom window. She came over the lawn from the direction of the Dunhill Crypt, and she walked past the chapel again, down that same path. A little later, I heard the carriage on the road.
You mean she went away in this carriage?
Yes, she went away.
But what can it mean?
That night, I knew she was more than a ghost. She was real, alive, even as you and I.
Could it be, then? Are you sure, Mary, your sister's really dead? It's happened before. I mean...
No. That night, I went to her tomb.
Mary.
I had to. I had to be sure. So I took the key. The family crypt is next to the chapel. You've seen it many times. I went there, secretly.
Mary, darling, don't tell me this. It terrifies you to speak of it.
But I must, Charles. You see, Josephine's coffin was open and empty.
What? Then she is alive.
No, you're wrong. On Sunday, I went again to the tomb. This time, the coffin was closed, and she lay inside as beautiful as when we placed her there 4 years ago. You must believe me, Charles. It's not the product of some extraordinary nightmare.
But if it's true you've seen this ghost, isn't it the specter of your sister whom you loved?
Charles, Father sent the carriage to London for you this afternoon because I have to tell you this. I love you more than anything in the world. And for that reason, oh, please try to understand me, Charles.
I will, Mary.
You must go away and never see me again. You must go away now, tonight.
Leave you? Oh, no, you don't mean that.
I do mean it. I must. It's the only thing left to do. I'm terrified of what may happen if you stay.
But you don't know what you're asking me. How can I leave you when we're to be married tomorrow?
But you don't understand. You must go. I won't let you stay.
Then tell me why. There's more to this than you've said. Tell me the rest of it.
Oh, it would do no good. You'd laugh and call me a silly, superstitious woman. And then it would happen as it must have happened before. To Josephine. No. No, Charles, please, I beg of you, go away. Find another girl to love you and forget me. For your own sake, please do as I say.
Mary!
Here we are, Father, in the garden.
Oh!
Does Sir Edward agree to this separation?
He doesn't know anything about it, Charles. Don't tell him. Only go, please.
No, I won't. I won't leave you. Not until I know you truly
Hello
want me.
Hello there, Charles. I'm very glad to see you, my boy.
Good evening, Sir Edward.
I suppose Mary's been telling you about this mysterious ghost business. She's been quite distracted over it.
She told me something about it, sir.
I'm glad you're here, my boy. Mary, how do you feel? You look tired and it's late. The wedding's tomorrow, you know.
You see, Charles, what can I do? I'm alone in this. Nobody believes me.
Now, Mary, it's not that we don't believe you. I do, my dear. Of course I do.
You must know, then, even as I know, that it's the Spectre Bride.
The Spectre Bride?
A foolish legend, my boy. Nothing to it. Now, listen, Mary. Take the advice of an old man who loves you dearly. Be content to be happy with Charles, because I know you love him very much. Marry and go away on your honeymoon and live your life without ever again thinking about these old family superstitions. They mean nothing, believe me.
You're both against me. All I can do is pray to heaven that it isn't true, that she hasn't returned.
Now, it's bedtime, my dear. And in the morning, I don't want to see your eyes red from crying. Promise me you'll go to sleep.
Will you and Charles do one thing for me, Father?
Of course we will, Mary.
Watch tonight for her. As sure as you watch, she'll appear on the path from the chapel, and she'll go solemnly over the lawn to the highway. Unless tonight she plans to stay.
We'll watch for her. We promise.
Good night.
Good night, my darling.
There, now. She's gone, and she needs to sleep. Frankly, I'm very worried about her, Charles.
But what is it, sir? Mary spoke of her sister. And then when you came, she said the Spectre Bride. What is this legend?
We hardly ever talk about it, my boy, but now it concerns you. With Mary, I try to make light of it, but in my heart, I know she dreads the legend as much as I.
But what is it?
It has to do with the Dunhills, of course, and goes back several centuries. From father to son, the story has passed down the years, though it affects only the women in our family. Our daughters, that is.
Affects them? How?
Well, it's the most awful thing. Really, it is. The story goes that no female Dunhill, although her love for a man may be deeper than most, can ever keep that love beyond her wedding day.
Oh, Sir Edward, you don't believe
it. Yes, I am afraid I do believe, Charles. I remember my unhappy sisters, my daughter Josephine, and I'm in sympathy with Mary's fear. But what can I do?
And how does the Spectre Bride figure in the legend?
With her, whomever and whatever she is, the dreadful curse began. She is the spirit of a woman who takes the body of another woman, a corpse, of course, and goes abroad with one purpose, to destroy love. The story tells that she's allowed this freedom only every seventh night, that at other times she's forced to remain a ghost, invisible and formless.
Where?
I'll tell you. But I want you to know I'm dead serious in this matter. I'm frightened, too. Because, you see, it's reputed that the Spectre Bride haunts the bell tower of our chapel.
You mean the ancient chapel just yonder? That's where Mary said she saw this ghost.
I know, and I believe her. But it was not my Josephine she saw, Charles. You know that, too.
Then who?
The Spectre Bride. Come to destroy your love for Mary. Come to take you away from her.
Then that's why she wanted me to believe. Mary believes this ghost story.
Call it what you like. The fact remains. And I'll tell you something else. When I was a young man, and only once did I do this, I climbed the narrow stairs to that bell tower. The stairway is almost hidden behind the pipes of the organ. And as I went up them, a terrible feeling of suffocation came over me. I managed to climb almost to the top to get a glimpse of the bell that doesn't ring. And then I could go no farther. I had been warned, but I did not heed the warning.
Then that may have been why Josephine fell from the tower. But why was she there?
I wish I knew, Charles. I wish I knew.
There must be something we can do about this. This demon bride, or whatever she is.
Can you trap a ghost? Can you fight an invisible force? An evil that transcends the years?
Perhaps not. Unless it lives in a form we can understand. Say a human form, Sir Edward. The corpse of your daughter. When does this ghost go abroad?
The legend says every seventh night. Tonight, at the stroke of 12.
Then come. Let's fetch the keys, quickly now. If Mary can visit your family tomb, so can we.
Here, Charles. Here's the key.
All right.
Let me hold the lantern.
Yes, sir. I'll have the door open in a moment.
You see, the family crypt adjoins the chapel. And just above us there is the bell tower.
Here we are, Sir Edward.
Josephine's coffin is the silver one near the north end of the crypt.
Come along.
Charles, look.
Is that her coffin, then? The one that stands open?
Yes. Open.
Hold the lantern high. The coffin's empty, just as Mary said.
Then it's true. Heaven help us, it's true.
But where could she be? It's only a minute or two after the time of midnight.
Gentlemen.
What?
Are you looking for me?
Charles. There, in the doorway.
Who are you?
Why, I'm Josephine Dunhill, am I not? Josephine, come to life again.
My daughter is dead. Her spirit is at peace with the living. You are not Josephine. You are the Spectre Bride.
Spectre Bride, coming your way after we chat a little bit.
Yeah, I found that piece on the sponsors, and it was, of course, this show, not the other show. And the sponsors varied as the series picked up throughout the affiliate stations across the U.S. One incarnation of note was Ogden Fine Cut Tobacco's sponsorship of the Weird Circle, packages Ogden Playhouse. Hogan's Playhouse didn't air the run in transcription order over U.S. stations. It aired other features under the Hogan's Playhouse banner as well. In Canada, however, Hogan's Playhouse aired the Weird Circle series without other intervening productions. The sponsors of notes were the Far Ice Cream Company on the West Coast, 7-Up in Arizona, and Remar's Bread on the West Coast. There you go. Some unique sponsors for the ice cream. I'm sorry.
Ice cream?
You can't go wrong with ice cream.
For the Far Ice Cream Company.
A different direction to go.
Yes.
A different direction to go in looking up unique aspects of radio programs. There's also I love the etymology or the origins of words. And we have this, it's the Weird Circle, and weird is in there. And what is weird? Weird is from Germany, meaning having the power to control destiny. But later, Shakespeare used it in I think, Macbeth. He had something, a group of
the weird sisters. Yeah, they were witches, the three witches, the weird sisters.
And they
sisters,
were witches,
yeah,
exactly. And yeah, so you get this transmogrify kind of thing where the weird goes from outwardly power to control things to witchcraft. Mm-hmm. Kind of an odd twist.
Well, we're kind of odd and twisted ourselves as we present some very eerie tales tonight about June brides.
Isn't this a great ghost story, though?
It is. Yeah.
Yeah. It's almost Victorian.
Yes, CW. Yes. Moose Tracks is good stuff. You know, they make the low sugar kind for guys like me.
They do.
Yes.
Yeah, they do.
Moose Tracks.
Low sugar.
Yes. Dave once postulated on this very show, Dave once postulated that perhaps the secret to world peace is contained in ice cream.
I honestly believe that, yeah.
That is hard logic to dispute.
Yeah.
I find
there may be cold wars, but they're even colder pieces through ice cream.
Oh.
Well, there you go. I'll agree. the Cold War would have been over a lot sooner if the cold would have been related to ice cream. You know, it would have been everybody would have been happy.
Yeah.
And if we would have had global warming earlier, you know, we could got it written to that Cold War. Yeah.
Well, you don't want it to warm too much because that ruins the ice cream. See, and that just kills the whole spirit of the thing.
Ice cream headaches would stun everyone into submission. There you go.
All part of
and
my
evil
plan.
And that's how we took over Las Vegas. That's right. Okay.
Yes. Why Las Vegas? Anyway.
I hear there's tigers there. I don't know.
Lions Am.
Yep.
Oh, my.
Hey, we got a lot of radio left.
We do. And leave it to Weird Circle to have a really nice tale that we're going to wrap up right now. The Spectre Bride.
Prehensile.
Word for today. Prehensile.
Are you sure that I'm the Spectre Bride, Sir Edward?
Yes, and we've felt your evil ghost before. What do you want here now?
You know as well as I, this young man. I believe he's the suitor for the hand of a fair lady. You're Mary, I believe, Sir Edward.
And tomorrow's our wedding day. Tomorrow, Mary Dunhill will be my wife.
Will she now? How certain you are. Though in your mortal lives there is nothing certain. Except death.
And even that can be a thing fraught with ill desire.
You mean the Spectre Bride, don't you, Sir Edward? And you are right.
What do you want here?
Something more precious than gold. Sought for by kings and little men. Something you can feel somewhere inside you like a flame. Love is an exquisite, precious thing. That is what I want.
For years I have heard of your magic, your lustful hate for those in love. Would you destroy this wondrous warmth in my daughter's heart when you've loved so much?
I would, Sir Edward. Indeed, I would.
You have usurped my other daughter's death. You have stolen her earthly beauty and taken it for your own.
Only because it serves my needs. How difficult it is for a man to touch his lips to those of a ghostly bride. How uneasy the chill runs down his spine. You see, this form I have, this body of Josephine, makes desire for the spectre bride run stronger, and she is kissed with fervor and with joy.
Leave us alone. We have had enough of your murderous intent. I implore you, let us manage our cursed lives alone.
When my own was taken from me by a jealous thrust by a Dunhill? No, Sir Edward. Yours is my special bent, my ghostly food, my evil fun. And will be until I die.
Then you can die, even as we. But how? How can you die?
Your voice is harsh. I do not like it so. Soon you will beg me to forgive you those words, Charles, and implore me to love you again.
You speak as if you love me now. Such nonsense doesn't frighten me.
Good. Good. And I do love you, in my own fashion.
But how can you die?
There was only one who knew, and I took her life because of it. But now we have talked enough. Tomorrow is the wedding.
Charles, she'll bring disaster to us.
Tomorrow the guests will fill the lawns. The wedding will occur, Sir Edward, as you planned.
What do you intend to do?
Only what I've done so many times before. Nothing can stop me, my Charles. By tomorrow you will not care for this arrangement you have made with that Dunhill. You will care only for me. You will love me more than you thought a mortal man can love a woman. And I shall love you, too, in my own way. Until my fancy tires. That is how it shall be. Good night to you both.
Come back, you devil. Sir Edward, she's gone.
It's no use, Charles.
But where is she going? Quick, Sir Edward, follow her.
No, no. For your own sake, leave the manor house. This very hour. It's my duty to warn you. She'll steal your love. No matter how strong you think you are, she'll wage a power no man can face without submitting. Tomorrow, just as she says you will, you'll worship the spectre bride even more in your life.
I don't believe it, Sir Edward. No woman, spectre or not, can force a man to love her. I'm not afraid for myself.
Then for whom?
Don't you see? If she cannot win me away, then she'll destroy the woman I love. She'll destroy Mary, Sir Edward.
Come along quickly, then, to the manor house. Mary, are you all right?
Open the door, Mary.
What's the matter, Charles? Did you keep watch for her father?
We did indeed.
You were right, Mary. The spectre bride's here, somewhere at the manor house.
Look, lock your terrace doors, my child. Lock them.
I'm not afraid.
But you are afraid. Your face is drawn and pale.
It's not I who should fear her, Charles. I can see now that father is resigned, as I am. Charles, take my hand a moment.
Mary, my darling Mary.
Tomorrow was to be our wedding day. Now she has come. I know you're no longer mine.
Mary, don't say that. Don't.
Then I'll say good night instead.
Good night, my child. Take care.
Good night, Father. I've done as you said. They're gone.
You are sensible as well as beautiful. The others foolishly fought me, and their loss was greater.
I've despaired enough. There's a limit to unhappiness.
On the one side, tears. And beyond sufficient tears is death. How wise you are. Can it be that you really don't love my Charles?
I love him more than you know.
But you were resigned when the others cried and hated me.
As my sister did. She whose body you inhabit now. She tried to win him back again. Did she succeed, and did you kill her because of that?
She did not succeed. She came too close to a secret I keep vigil over. And she died because of that.
Why do you destroy us with your terror? Who are you that make the Dunhill daughters your special lot for vengeance?
You have asked enough. I'd rather you lived a life of my incessant torment than kill you now because you feel this curiosity.
What do you want me to do?
Leave me to enjoy your sorrow. As the sun rises, Charles will wake to my magic, and he will love only me. Ah, here is your wedding gown, the lovely veil. I shall wear them well, and Charles will marry the spectre bride because he desires her more than anything in the world. Since I am your twin, he will not want to tell Sir Edward who I am, and I will stay his bride until I tire of his undying love.
I hate you with all my heart.
Poor, foolish mortal. Were you less serious, happiness would be easier. Good night. When you love again, we will meet again.
Who's there?
Charles, it's I, Mary, here on the terrace outside your window.
Mary, I thought you were asleep. I've been sitting here in the dark waiting for her, the Spectre Bride.
Charles, there's so little time. Will you help me? Do you love me still?
I'll always love you, Mary. Always.
But the dawn will come, and then it'll be too late. Listen to me. I can't give you up. I can't. There must be a way to stop her. Help me find the way, Charles.
I will, darling. Anything. But how?
I'm not sure. For an hour, I've been hiding in the garden. You see, she came to my room, and she plans to marry you tomorrow. For by then, you'll have knowledge of her magic charm and gladly love her.
Oh, no, you can't believe that.
It will happen. I know it will, because it happened before to Josephine. Listen to me closely. There's not a moment to waste. It was the morning of the wedding day, and William Kilfer came to tell Josephine he loved another woman. And that was what we had feared would happen.
You mean the Spectre Bride?
She stole his love from my sister. Josephine couldn't stop it. That day she asked me not to tell Father what had happened. Then she began her search.
For what?
She never told me. But tonight I've asked myself, what could it be except the secret of the Spectre Bride?
Where did she search?
In the oldest wing of the manor house, in books unread for 100 years, and in the ancient family portraits. Afterwards I saw how she pried loose the canvases.
But if she found nothing...
Did she find nothing, though? Or did she, after all, find what she was looking for? Don't you see, Charles? Josephine was murdered by the Spectre Bride.
In the bell tower.
The haunted bell tower. Haunted by the ghost of this demon woman. Where hangs the bell that's never tolled. Never once.
Then Josephine must have gone there with reason.
And if she discovered some secret, perhaps the very reason for the Spectre Bride, then maybe that's why she was killed.
I begin to see.
Every seventh day she's allowed to take a human form. At other times her spirit hovers in the tower, and then a human being cannot go there. But this is a seventh day. Charles, look, I have the key to the little door behind the organ loft.
The key? Give it to me. Are you afraid?
No, Charles, not afraid, because I go with you.
Mary, lift the lantern a bit. This lock will hardly turn.
Hurry, Charles, before she comes.
There. Come along. Give me the lantern. I'll lead the way. How narrow it is. Be careful. The stair is steep and circular.
When we near the top, hold the lantern down. From my bedroom window, you can see the tower.
Then she'll surely come.
I pray to heaven we're doing the right thing. I pray we are.
Mary, here we are. Step up quickly.
How small the tower is. And the bell so huge and still.
Where shall we look?
I don't know. On the walls, the ceiling, anywhere.
Stand back from the edge. Now you can see how easy it was for Josephine to fall.
Why, if the bell rang, you could scarce escape its motion. There's so little room.
Look on the bell itself. Here, follow the light around it.
There's nothing here, nothing at all.
This bell must be as old as the chapel itself. Why has it never tolled?
Charles, inside the bell. Look inside.
Hold the lantern. I'll climb under it.
Be careful, Charles.
I can stand upright inside it, Mary. Pass me the lantern.
Here it is, Charles.
Can you hear me?
Yes, but what do you see, Charles? Is there any...
Mary, there are words here. Lots of them. Words cast in relief on the bell itself.
Read them, Charles. Read them to me aloud. Hurry.
They run in a circle. Where does it begin? Here. Here it is. Silent be this bell until the time when one of my kinsmen, whose love is greater than the sorrow of losing it, shall ask forgiveness of Margaret Tulliver for John Ashley Dunhill, who because of his jealous love did slay her in this tower on our wedding day, 1365. Only then will this bell toll and the specter of my bride be deposed and her evil curse expelled.
This is the legend, then, that Josephine searched for and died because she found it. Charles, come out. There's someone on the stairs.
Take the lantern. Quickly now.
Keep me safe from her.
Don't be afraid. Stand back against the bell.
You have invaded my tower.
Is it yours now, Margaret Tulliver? Or does it once again belong to the Dunhills?
You have found the legend.
And for my ancestor, I beg your forgiveness. He died with remorse for what he had done. And I live with a love in my heart far greater than the sorrow of losing
it. Hold the bell still. Stand against it before it moves.
Mary, come here to the stairs. What are you afraid of, Margaret Tulliver? Afraid the bell will ring?
I never loved him, your John Ashley Dunhill. But he loved me with all his heart and soul. That night here in the tower, I told him that I could never care for one man any more than the rest. And he took me fiercely by the shoulders, and I screamed and went falling to the ground below. And then I cursed him and swore to destroy his jealous love, to always destroy the love of a woman, Dunhill.
But when he died, he knew he had left a way to you, because the bell will ring and unbind you from the earth.
Look, even now it moves. Can you hold it still with your spectral charms?
Charles, keep back.
Come down, Mary. Let her hold back the sound alone.
Mary! Mary! Charles! You've been in the tower.
Father, listen to the bell. Listen to the bell. It rings in sight of her.
She's there, Sir Edward. The Spectre Bride.
No. No. Didn't you see her plummet from the edge? It was the bell that did it. With one swing, it pushed her from the tower.
Charles, look there on the ground. The Spectre Bride. Even as she was murdered hundreds of years ago, so she has died again. Oh, my darling, there's nothing to fear any longer. We two are free. Are free!
I'm free.
From the time-worn pages of the past, we have brought you the story, The Spectre Bride. Bellkeeper, toll the bell.
Toll the bell. Hurry, toll the bell.
That rat's off. Hey, give me a break. I made it this far without a cigarette so far. Ah, that was the Spectre Bride from the Weird Circle. But is vaping cheating?
I don't know what that is.
Vaping?
I still think that's a nicotine thing.
Yes. Tar, at least. So, hey, one out of two ain't
no,
bad.
But chromium and nickel, even better.
Heavy metal, baby. Heavy metal. All right. So we learned something there. Well, let's learn something else. Eerie House Radio proudly presents another Gar's Moral of the Story.
I can only imagine that a curse of circumstance Like being surrounded by finger foods but not having any fingers has to be the worst of curses. Never put...
Just a mirthful little laugh there.
Never put a caveat on your curses.
Hey. Or caviar, for that matter.
But you can put caviar on them, but a caveat, well, yeah.
Yeah.
That's like a workaround. That's a way out. That's a, yeah. You.
I see.
But how would you like that, to be surrounded by finger foods but have no fingers? That's pretty rough.
That's pretty rough.
It depends.
Pretty
if
rough.
It was sushi, I wouldn't care too much. I'm not a sushi kind of guy.
Is sushi
a
finger
raw,
food?
Raw fish and fish eggs. Both of those are not on my...
They're a finger food for me. I'm not using chopsticks. What? I'm not smart enough.
Or the caviar, you could use a straw.
Yeah.
I understand. Nah. Anyway.
I'm sorry, Dave. We cut you off.
No, that's okay. No, thank you. Now I have much more of this fish stuff, though, and I'm going to head to another room.
I had one last one in the wings, and it went.
Really?
I missed something there. My audio completely went out, and I think I lost the guys. What happened? Folks, can you still hear Dale K? Because I lost both of my guests. I hope you can still hear us. Say something in the chat if you can, because our guys are here. Here's Dave back in the fold.
Thanks, Blog Talk, for cutting me off. Actually,
well, they
Google
cut off Gar, too. They dumped you both.
Yeah,
I'm not
they
sure
did.
Why.
So it's probably we're both usually using Google Voice, and now he's back.
That'll quit with the Google thing.
I had to find which tab it was. It was like, which one?
How's that Google Voice working for you?
I don't know. We dropped it in mid-sentence. I said, a curse is just words with tingles attached. There we go.
Or okay. The bad word.
You gotta watch those attached. You gotta watch those attached tingles, man.
You do.
That can be
do.
Dangerous.
Because that'll get you.
I
can really hear you now. What is it? Even louder?
Yes.
I didn't change anything. I
no.
apologize.
No, you. Well, there we go. They can really hear us now. I'll back off.
Yes. Yeah, they have returned successfully. It just got so quiet. I thought I was, like, the whole show ended or something. Fortunately, the gang confirmed that I am still audible.
That's when you key up the Indian love call or whatever that is.
Yeah, that good old Slim Whiskey there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. Well, fellas, welcome back to Erie House.
We got one more to go.
Radio. We do.
We do got one more to go, yes.
And maybe enough time to do it. Inner Sanctum. Why not finish with a strong story called Scream?
And Ooh. It's the host, isn't it? Is it the host or is it the other guy?
No, the host
or
is
it Raymond.
Screaming.
Is, no,
it,
is
Raymond?
It Raymond or is it?
I'm pretty sure it's. What year is this car? What year?
1950. And
okay, yeah, this would be Paul McGrath.
Paul McGrath.
Paul McGrath.
Paul McGrath is the host.
He's still pretty good.
Oh.
He's good.
Oh, yeah.
I think the kids
both
say
other.
Meh. I think it's meh.
Meh. Meh.
No, they say
meh.
No. They say meth. They say meth.
Yeah,
they say meth.
Do they?
Meh.
Do they?
Meh.
I got to tell you, this story, I had to write down the characters and follow. This was... I had problems following this. I had to write down the characters and who they were and what they were doing, and it was weird.
Okay, what's our original broadcast date?
We have, according to 8 people, in Wyoming, Nebraska, January 16th, 1950.
There you go.
That's the entire population.
I didn't know Nebraska had a whale.
Good evening, friends of the creaking door. This is your host to welcome you into the inner sanctum. Come on in. Well, let me tell you about the loot we picked up in our family. Mother got a new broom. Yeah, she needed it ever since she wrecked the old one in a forced landing on the roof last month. Uncle William got a fur-lined straitjacket. And dear, darling little Aunt Matilda got a new hat pin. Yes, her last one got stuck in the skull of her fourth husband. All right. Turn your lights low and your radio up. And remember that all the actors getting killed on this program are being well paid for it. The winter winds moaned around the gabled house like a wandering band of wailing women. As Caroline Giles, puzzled and frightened by something she's seen in the gathering dusk, makes her way into the living room. This is young Mrs. Giles' first night at the family mansion built by her husband's grandfather. Only this morning, the attractive bride arrived after a honeymoon trip in Europe. When she enters the huge, shadow-filled room, she notices the servant girl at the window. She's a young girl, the only other person in the house. And Caroline can see that she's scarcely able to control the terror she feels.
Mary?
Yes, ma'am.
What's going on out there?
Nothing. When will Mr. Giles be home?
He should be here within an hour. Why are those cars stopping out there?
Cars, Mrs. Giles?
Oh, really, Mary? You must see them as well as I do. Three of them stopped within a few minutes. Look, there's another one.
Maybe that's Mr. Giles.
No, the car isn't coming into the driveway. It's stopping outside. Who are these people, Mary?
I don't know.
Why should they stop outside? What did they want?
I don't know.
Oh, God, Mary. You don't know. No reason to come stealth.
Mrs. Giles, come away from the window.
But why?
You don't know them. Oh, please come away from the window.
Mary, why? Now.
Oh, I warned you. They're throwing rocks through the window. Get down, Mrs. Giles. Get down on the floor. You'll be hurt.
But Mary.
Oh, please. Mrs. Giles, just pray that they don't come in here. Just pray that they don't.
Wait a minute, Mary. I hear sirens. It's the police.
Oh, the police. Oh, thank heaven. They'll make them go away.
Mrs. Giles, I'm Richard Croydon, the mayor of this town. I'm sorry we had to come here under these circumstances.
How do you do?
This is John Dent, our local chief of police.
Mrs. Giles, I'm very sorry about what happened tonight. The crowd is gone now. I'll do my best to see that it never happens again.
I've also come to offer what apologies I can. Must have been a frightful experience for you on your first day here. Our people may appear civilized enough, but in many ways we're a very primitive community. I suppose your husband told you that.
No, he didn't. But David told me about you, Mr. Croydon. He said you were the oldest friend he has. I believe you live down the road?
Yes, that's right. That's how I happened to see those cars coming, and I phoned Chief Dent.
But why did those cars come, Mr. Croydon?
Why?
Well, yes. Why should those people who hardly know me do a thing like this?
Well, didn't David tell you?
Tell me what?
Where is David now?
He went to town. I expect him in a minute.
Well, perhaps he'll tell you what you want to know when he returns.
Why can't you tell me?
I'm not sure that I care to.
Mr. Dent, perhaps you'll be kind enough to explain this.
Well, them people weren't after you, ma'am. They were after the man you married.
David? What?
Dent, if Mr. Giles hasn't told her, I don't think it's your place to do so.
Well, the woman has a right to know. The reason them folks are trying to kill Mr. Giles is because they think he's a murderer. Some call him even worse than that.
What do you mean?
Mrs. Giles, 2 years ago, a series of killings began in this here county. Girls, young girls... Four of them were found on lonely roads, stabbed to death. Homicidal maniac, that's what the state police officer said.
And my husband?
Well, your husband was arrested for them crimes. He was tried right here, but they let him go. We didn't have enough evidence.
David, I can't believe it.
Why should they suspect him?
Well, he knew one of them girls, and, well, he had been sent away, ma'am.
Sent away? What are you talking about?
Well, everyone knowed there was something wrong with him. He had to go to an asylum for a while.
That's quite enough, then. Mrs. Giles, I must tell you this. David was discharged from the rest home, completely cured. It was nothing more than a nervous breakdown. Dent, you have no right to frighten her like this.
I'm not frightened. And I'm very grateful to Mr. Dent for telling me what he did. I just want to know one thing. My husband was acquitted. Why should they still believe he's guilty?
Because since he left town 6 months ago, there ain't been none of these murders. Not a single one. Now that he's back, they'll start again.
That's what you believe, Mr. Dent?
Oh, no, ma'am, but that's what the folks are saying.
Thank you. And now, if you don't mind, I'd like to be alone.
Mrs. Giles, if there's anything I can
no,
do...
No, no, thank you. There's nothing. Good night, Mr. Croydon.
Good night. Come along, then.
Good night, ma'am.
Good night. Hello? Operator, will you give me the number of the railroad station, please? No. Never mind, operator. Don't bother.
Are you going to leave, Carolyn?
David, you heard.
Yes. And I heard everything else my very old friend, Mr. Dent, told you. I was behind the other door.
Then why didn't you come in?
Why ruin their fun? Besides, I was curious to see just what your reaction would be.
David, why did they have to tell me? Why couldn't you?
You think this was an easy thing to tell to a newly married bride?
I would have found out sooner or later.
I did plan to tell you, Carolyn, in due time. That's why I ordered Mary not to say anything.
Darling, it isn't true. This is all an insane dream, a nightmare.
No, Carolyn, it's not a dream, but in many ways it is a nightmare. Were you going to run away from me, Carolyn? Is that why you phoned the station?
Yes.
Carolyn, if you want to leave me, I can't blame you. I realize it may be asking a little too much of any woman to be my wife and to live here.
Why did you come back here, Dave?
Because I want to prove to them that I'm not what they think I am. And I was hoping you'd help me. I thought maybe you loved me enough for that. Carolyn, I'm terribly sorry it must end this way.
I'm not going to leave, David.
Carolyn, I hope you understand what you're saying. You may be risking your life by remaining here.
I love you, David. I'll risk it.
I want you to be certain, because in the end I may fail and be put to death.
To death?
Yes, there are going to be other murders.
Other murders?
Don't ask me how I know this, but I'm almost positive that sometime tonight a girl in or near this community will be killed, brutally stabbed to death. I'll have to go out tonight and see if I can prevent it. You still want to remain?
Why are you telling me this?
Because I want to know if you really love me or if you said what you did to placate a madman, to quiet a homicidal maniac who may still murder you. Are you going to stay, Carolyn?
Yes. I'm going to stay, David. Now, just try to calm down.
And I saw them. I saw them out
Mary,
there.
Mary, try to pull yourself together. Tell me what you saw.
There was a man out there. A man moving around.
Are you sure of it, Mary? I don't see anyone.
Well, maybe you can't see him from here, but I saw him from the window of my room.
All right. Let's look out the window of your room.
I don't want you to think I'm seeing things. I'm not the kind of girl who sees things.
I didn't say you were, Mary, but I... Well, I don't notice anything unusual from your window either.
You don't see anything?
Just the lawn, the tree. Mary, I know we've all been under strain today. I guess we're a little jumpy, aren't we?
I guess so. But I wish Mr. Giles were here. I don't like us two being alone.
I know, Mary. But it can't be helped. Now, come, dear. I think you'd better go back to bed.
But I'm afraid to be alone in here. They can get in through the window.
Then we'll close the shutters. Help me, Mary.
All right, ma'am.
There we are. The outside doors are all closed.
Yes, I locked it myself, but Well, still, this is a very old house. They can get in.
Well, there's a lock on your door that works quite well. You can lock the door from the inside, and then you'll be as safe as you can possibly be.
All right. I'll do that when you go.
Very well, Mary. I'll go back to my room. I'm sure you'll sleep now. Good night.
I hope so. Good night, Mrs. Giles.
Did you lock the door, Mary?
Yes, I just did. I'm turning out the light now. I'm sorry I troubled you, Mrs. Giles.
Good night.
Good night. Oh, she's right. I must be hearing things. Mrs. Giles! There's someone in here! Right, Oh, let go of my hand! Mrs. Giles!
Mary?
He was locked in here with me. Help me, Mrs. Giles!
Get me!
Oh, wait! That knife! I can feel it, a knife! I'll stop it! You'll be pleased, no, no!
Dade, we think. We don't know. We'll find out.
It was weird.
Inner Sanctum Scream.
I could not find who the actress was for Mary, the servant girl, who just got wiped out. The only thing I found was Barbara Weeks was in this. Ernest Chappell was in this. Martin Gable was in this. Louis Van Ruten was in it, and Everett Sloan. And Paul McGrath was the host. But no information about who the servant girl was. I liked her, too. I was rooting for her.
Some relation of Ernest Borgnine, I believe.
I think so. The key to that is the fact that she had a prehensile tail, I'm sure.
Yes.
Yeah, I was going to say, that's probably why they couldn't put her on, because she had a tail.
And Linda Lou wants a coffee table book of Gar's morals of the story, and she wants hers autographed. Gosh, wow.
We'll talk to the marketing department. Yeah. <what? laughs> There you go. Yeah, weird circle. Spectre Bride. That was our last story. We're, of course, on the screen from Inner Circle, just to see if you're paying attention.
Of a program called Inner Sanctum, right? Yeah.
Yes. Just testing you, gang, to see if you were paying attention. And you are.
Wow. A cigarette
does
that to you, huh?
This is Erie House Radio, right? I'm at the right place?
Yes.
Okay. Oldie-timey radio? Yeah, that's it. Okay, all right.
Lack of tobacco is driving me mad.
Woo-hoo. What was it we had going on? Oh, we had something going on.
Some lady got killed.
Hey Gar, CW said she'll negotiate that book with Moose and Elk.
Only negotiate with Moose and Squirrel.
Moose and Squirrel.
I know what it was, Dave. You know what we've missed for so long,
what
Dave?
What do we miss?
There's no way
that's
I can upload that music fast enough for this.
That's not a scream. That's a cry, Gar. That's a cry.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Never mind.
Yes. Once again, Gar emotes.
there was the ooh. What was the other thing? I forget. there was gosh, I can't remember. There was something else, too. Yeah. Moose and Squirrel.
Getting into Gar's memory, please. Wait.
Just keep going. Hey, this thing hasn't... The needle needs to be changed or something. I can't be responsible.
Yeah. Every once in a while, those needles get a little dull. They do.
Yeah. Thank goodness for notes. And Louis von Rutten.
Yep, yep. My favorite note is a G sharp. There we go.
This is called the scream. It doesn't say anything about wife or well, I mean, yeah, she's in there. Don't leave me. There. I've got to leave you. Don't leave me. The winter winds moaned against the gable house. It is a very unusual description that really isn't fitting for the actual radio program. It's kind of weird. Dale left.
No, I'm still here. I'm not all here.
Okay.
But I'm here.
Well, he left the conversation.
No. Not permanently.
Yeah, so we got moose and elk, moose and squirrel, moose track ice cream. And if you, mm-hmm. See, the moose track ice cream is, that's actually a comedy in and of itself. Because the moose tracks are these little globules of chocolate and peanut butter. There we go. Which, if you're following a moose, would be something you wouldn't want to eat. And that's where that was going. Yeah.
Yep.
But it sure makes for good ice cream. And that is the story of the week.
There you go.
There we go. I'm not satisfied until he weeps like a baby.
Oh, my.
I think we better finish off a story here.
Yeah. And we got a whole minute left to this. No, never mind.
So do we? Well, I can come up with something else. A long time ago, in a land
in a galaxy far, far away.
In a galaxy far, far away. They killed Dr. Smith! Yay!
They also killed the lady in...
The lady! Oh, lady! They just killed
this lady
named Sally? Was it? No, Mary, the servant girl. Killed. Dead.
Here's
gone.
Part two. We'll be back.
Well, friends, this is your host again. You ready to go on with our story of married bliss? Bliss. You know, if Caroline had only listened to this program, she'd have realized that it's always a mistake to marry a man who has a weakness for murdering the domestic help. It not only makes house cleaning difficult, but creates a terrible servant problem. But there is one compensation in marrying a homicidal maniac. When you'd call your mate crazy, you'd be so right. Well, let's get on with our story. As you remember, Caroline couldn't break into Mary's room. And now she rushes to the telephone and dials the operator.
Hello? Get me the police. Hurry, please. Hello? This is Mrs. Carolyn Giles. Will you please send someone right away? I think there's been a murder.
Hang up, Carolyn. Hang up that phone. What's the matter with you? Why didn't you do as I told you? I don't want the police to know about this until we're ready.
That room. You just came out of Mary's room.
Yes, I saw her.
Saw her? You were in there all the time. You were wanting to know whether you killed her.
Carolyn.
You murdered her. They're right about you. You murdered her.
Carolyn, you're hysterical.
Oh, no,
stop it now. Stop it. Sorry I had to do that. Now you must get a grip on yourself.
Yes, David. I'll be all right. I'm all right now. How did you get into her room?
I heard screams when I parked the car. The window to her room was open and I climbed through. I saw her on the bed and then I unlocked the door and came in here.
You found the window open?
Mm.
But I locked it myself. I bolted the shutters.
Well, it's open now. When did you bolt the window?
A little while ago. The murderer must have been in the room hiding, but she locked herself in.
I guess he escaped through the window.
Yes. Perhaps that's what happened.
You still think I killed her?
I don't know what to think anymore. The way you came from her room.
I explained that.
Yes, I suppose you did.
Carolyn, now listen to me. If I killed her, do you think I'd be talking to you now? Here, look.
Gun.
If I'd murdered Mary, the next step would be to kill you. And you see how easy it is for me to do it. Now, Carolyn, you believed in me before. I'm asking you to believe in me again. I don't want the police to know I left this house tonight. Stan's like the rest of them. He hates me. He'd be glad to accuse me of this crime. Now, Carolyn, I want you to say I was home all night with you.
And if I don't?
I've got this gun, Carolyn. If you let me down, nothing much will matter then. Now, that might be the police, Carolyn. I'm going to open the door.
Good evening, Mr. Giles.
Good evening, Dent.
You got here quickly. Maybe that's because I was kind of expecting to come.
Oh, have you been watching my house?
I ain't saying. When I got that radio call, I didn't lose any time. Oh, Mrs. Giles, you phoned in something about a murder?
Yes, our girl, Mary, she's in there.
Oh. Mr. Giles?
Are you accusing me of this too, Dent?
It's mighty funny, right here in your own home.
This time, I can easily prove that I had nothing to do with it. My wife and I were together all night.
Is this right, Mrs. Giles?
That's right, Mr. Dent.
Hello, David.
Richard. Come in.
I understand that Dent questioned you again this morning.
Yes, but he didn't get anywhere. I think even he's beginning to get the idea that I'm not a murderer.
I see.
Oh, Carolyn, dear.
Oh, hello there. David, why didn't you warn me your friend was coming tonight?
Well, I phoned Richard only a few minutes ago. You see, Carolyn, I have to go out.
Go out?
Yeah. I didn't want to leave you alone after everything that's happened.
I know, but... Well, couldn't we come with you, David?
No, I'm afraid not.
Why not?
Well, it might be dangerous.
David, where are you going?
I'm sorry, dear, but I can't tell you. It won't be a long trip. It's only about 20 miles or so. That's all the information I can give you.
Has this something to do with these murders?
Perhaps.
Now, David, I wouldn't advise you to take matters into your own hands.
I'm afraid I have to, Richard. You see, the police haven't gotten very far, and my life is at stake.
Your life?
Isn't it obvious? The people are stirred up about these crimes. Who can tell when one of them may take it into his head to murder me? It's becoming a matter of the killer's life or my own. Furthermore, there's another reason why I must solve this. A reason I can't divulge right now.
Why not?
Darling, please don't ask me. I think that after tonight, all this will be over. Bye, Richard. Goodbye, Carolyn.
Bye. Richard?
Yes?
What did he mean by another reason?
Well, Carolyn, if he's right about the murderer, then the next logical victim will be a girl, an attractive girl who's very close to him. So that people will suspect him even more. And the most likely person is yourself.
It's 10 o'clock. Did he tell you how long we'd stay away, Richard?
No, he didn't. Shall I deal another round? Oh, that must be David.
Hello? David, are you all right, darling? Well, when will you be home? All right, I'll tell Richard. Goodbye. David's on his way home. He'll be here in an hour.
Where did he call from?
A town called Waverly. He says he knows who the killer is.
That's impossible.
How do you know?
Because if he knew, he'd never have made that call.
I don't understand.
It was a perfect signal to the murderer.
Murderer?
It told him that he was safe. That he had all the time he needs. A full hour.
Richard. You.
Please. I must warn you not to do anything foolish. It will only make matters worse for yourself.
What do you have in your hand?
A knife. You see, I simply press this button and it snaps open. Try to control yourself, Carolyn. Don't
Don't try to fight the inevitable. Take my advice and submit to what will come. It will be less painful.
Scold me?
You'll see how futile it is to struggle. I have the knife at your throat now. I have only to move my arm, and it's all over.
Why don't you? Why are you waiting?
There's no rush. For once, I have a little time.
Time?
Time seems to extend the experience. I must warn you not to scream. The moment you do, it will all come to an end, suddenly, violently. Screams are dangerous. One can never tell who hears them.
Take the knife away.
No.
Please.
Fear seems to do something to your features, Carolyn. You look extraordinarily beautiful. And I must compliment you on your self-control. You still haven't even raised your voice.
You can't get away with this, Richard. David will come home and find you.
That's not quite how it will happen. David will come home and find you. I shall have the rare pleasure of seeing his reaction. And then it will be his turn.
Going to kill him?
Yes, it will be a new experience. I've never murdered a man before.
It can't possibly work. You'll be caught.
I plan to be. But I shall plead self-defense. Everyone will believe me because I'll tell them he murdered you. It's very difficult not to scream, isn't it, Carolyn?
They won't believe you. They'll never believe you.
Oh, yes, they will. My police commissioner hates David because he was freed after Dent arrested him. And his position also depends upon me. Oh, I admire you, Carolyn. None of the others held out this long. You must almost be insane with fear and terror, aren't you? And yet...
I won't scream, Richard. I won't.
In the end, you will.
I won't.
You must.
I won't.
You really are extraordinary, Carolyn.
I won't. Ah! Help me, someone help!
Carolyn.
Don't understand. You were here.
Almost all evening. I phoned from a neighbor's house to make him force his hand. I got back just in time.
Still alive?
Yes. Richard.
David, did you know? You couldn't have been that clever.
I suspected you, Richard, but I wasn't certain till tonight.
It was a trap. And Carolyn the bait. All a trick.
I'm afraid that's what it was, Richard. Why did you make them think it was me?
Why? Because you were a child. Always a little too clever. Never quite one of us. But you'll die for this, David. You'll be blamed for this and the other murders. I've left letters accusing you of the crimes. And Dent will believe them. Even over your wife's testimony. You die for this. They'll kill you.
He's dead.
David, is it true what he said about the letter?
Probably. Dent will never believe me.
Good evening, Mr. Giles.
Dent.
Yeah. Been out there all night. When I heard the shots, I came running in. So you killed him.
Yes, but I had to, Dent. He was going to murder my wife.
That's true. He's the homicidal maniac you've been looking for. You've got to believe that, Mr. Dent.
Of course I believe it, ma'am. Been suspecting him for a long time. Ever since he spread them stories to folks about Mr. Giles. And I heard what he said before he died. You've got nothing to fear now, Mrs. Giles. You and your husband can live here and we'll be proud to have you. And some folks will be mighty ashamed about what they've been saying and doing. I reckon I'd better call in, get them to take this man away.
I bet you thought David was crazy, but he fooled you, didn't he? As the squirrel said to the walnut tree, you're still not as nutty as people. And that brings us to the moral of this story, which is taken from a retired witch who once said,
why slice your husband's head off when it's so easy to nag him to death?
Here's a little thought to take to bed. Never murder your enemies, because then you'll have no one to hate but yourself.
Inner Sanctum has been brought to you through the facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education.
Yeah, he wasn't quite as creepy as Raymond Edward Johnson, but boy, Raymond Edward Johnson had a heck of a lot of work outside of here. He left it when he got drafted into the into World War II, and when he came back, it didn't look like he didn't ask for a job back. He just had a ton of other things that he did, other things that he hosted, and other things, and a lot of things he just acted in as well. So.
And if that wasn't informational enough, Erie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
Never throw glass at rock houses. It might catch you on the rebound.
No starts in 2 minutes.
There you
go. Yes. You start over again?
Yes, we do.
No, no.
It's a do-over. No, not a do-over, but
I'm getting more coffee.
I hope you guys I hope you guys will like the ad I'm coming up with for tomorrow's bridal tale as we present. What are we presenting? At 6:30, no less. Easter. It's CBS Radio Mystery Theater. Live from Tennessee. Sitting on the porch with my old hound dog. Oh. The show's called Here Goes the Bride from CBS Radio Mystery Theater. You know, I haven't had a cigarette since the show began.
He's on a short fuse. That's what he's
doing.
Ribbon gobber!
He hasn't had a cigarette, but he has gained 5 pounds during this broadcast.
Yes. Per cheek.
I think that's how it works. That's how it works.
And never mind which ones.
Yeah.
Yes.
And what happens when this show opens, ends about 8 o'clock tomorrow night, what will be happening then?
Yeehaw.
Yeehaw! Come on down to the corn cob patch, whatever it's called. That was, talking about a pregnant pause. My gosh. Couldn't find the word.
Pause? You could have given birth.
Yes, I could have. At 8 p.m. Eastern time. I don't know.
Eastern
8 p.m.
Eastern daylight
sometime.
Time.
Easter Bunny, Easter Wyoming, time. Nebraska. I don't know. Horrible Horror starring Gar the Ghoul will be on live.com. I don't know.
Twitch TV. Twitch TV.
That thing. Yeah, there.
Yep, that's right after our show at 6:30 Eastern.
And I'm going to write down Horror Host Hall of Fame. Because last week I tried to say that 6 times and I couldn't say it once. Horror Host.
There you go.
I have difficulty with it too.
Hall of Fame. Yeah. Well, I understand it to be one place I'll never be, but you know that Dave is going to be there, so
maybe
Dave
we'll
is.
See.
Dave
yes.
is up for it. Vote Dave.
Yes.
Vote twice. Well, never.
Yeah.
Goodbye. Say goodbye to Vince.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him. When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
Bring some smoke.
Right after Frankenstone. Bye, audience. We love you. Well.
Dale, last week on the show I was doing, I sat there and I was trying to push Dave's Horror Host Hall of Fame, and I couldn't think of it. I was like, I think he's being nominated as the best potato peeler in the South.
Yeah,
I'm
like
not
that,
sure.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
No. It's
I couldn't put the words together. And thankfully, Fogsbane and Dave kind of gave me an assist, so I finally got it together. But
yep.
I couldn't get the words.
Get them votes out there.
I was like, the annual, he was going to be the yearly, the annual Horror Host something. I don't know. But you guys,
they put up a Horror Host for the Horror Host Hall of Fame each year. Some are selected by a committee for people to vote on. At least that's the way it was done when I was part of the committee.
Right.
And then the votes were sent in to a particular email address, I believe.
Right.
Tallied, and then awards were given for them what got inducted.
Yes, and I asked Dave, toss up a link, but I don't think there's a link yet up or something.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking for. Yeah, they have to have the list. I think the list is finished. I just it took them 3 days to put it out. There's about 8 to 10 people, I think, on the list there, and I think about half of them.
Get handy with that link. Tomorrow, Dave, if you want to drop by and put it up there. Yeah. Well, I'm trying to figure out what it's called. You're trying to find a link.
You know, this vaping thing takes work.
Supposedly, it's far more intrusive than the other. Supposedly, there's nickel and chromium coming into your lungs, metals. Instead of tobacco and tar, stick with the tar and the tobacco. I think you'd be better off.
Thank you, Dr. Gar.
Sure, anytime.
Well,
You
just can't win.
Well, you can. You can, as long as you're happy smoking. Keep smoking, but smoke the natural stuff, not this whatever this vaping.
Hey, watch, that's natural stuff.
What? Well, like tobacco.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, you scared me.
No, I'm that was never part of that, whatever that was, no. I smoked from like 14 to 45, something like that.
Yeah? It's a good time to quit. Still got a chance to heal. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I quit when I was 45. I'm not 45 anymore.
Sometimes I feel like I was cheated.
It only happens for a year, I think.
Huh?
I sometimes I feel cheated because I never smoked. And I didn't have all the fun of quitting.
Oh, no, you didn't. What? You didn't cheat. No. First of all, you saved a ton, a freaking ton of money.
Oh yes. Yes.
I'll tell you that right there. That fucks
a friend
up
who
a lot of the economy in this household, I'll tell you.
And then it affects your behavior. It can affect so many different things, you know. And, you know.
It's great when you want to be antisocial.
But it's like if you enjoy drinking coffee, drink coffee. If you feel like you don't like drinking coffee, then stop drinking coffee. If you enjoy smoking cigarettes, then as long as you enjoy it, it's a plus in your life. The point where you sit there and go, I don't like doing this. I don't feel it's healthy. I feel like then you need to stop.
Yeah.
Just stop, because then you're actually creating a negative aspect in your life. And who needs that?
And if your thing is like cutting off parts of your body, that's not – you're only going to get to do that once or twice maybe, you know.
And I don't think that's a positive – thing in your life, but
no,
you know, I could be wrong.
Some people, they're weird, and I don't know.
If some people are going, I can't wait to cut off a body part. I can't wait. I just need to get home to my axe. You know, I don't.
There are all kinds, brother. There are all kinds in the world.
There are. There are many types. Yes, there are.
Yes.
But yeah, that's my philosophy. I doctors definitely wouldn't agree, but I do feel like, you know, if you're happy in your life and you're not hurting anybody, then enjoy your life, you know.
If you're happy and you know it,
cut off a hand. Cut off your hand.
Cut off your hand. If you're happy and you know it, cut off your hand.
And if you're happy and you know it, cut off your other hand, but I don't know how you're going to do it with an axe. Maybe in your teeth. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. How does that work?
If you're happy and you know it, you'll get inventive to figure out how to cut off your own legs. Yeah, so, you know, it's with no arms and hands. But the moral of that story is quit while you're ahead.
Quit
while
you're
ahead. That was kind of painful right there.
Yep.
You had fun.
That was. Yeah. So I don't have any anecdotes about killer husbands or killer wives or any. Nope, nothing here. Did any of your practice wives try to kill you guys? I don't know.
My practice wife.
Only the spirit. Only the spirit.
Only the spirit. Okay.
My practice wife had a cousin who got married shortly, I think, after we did. And I made friends, pretty good friends with that girl's husband. And I guess there was an altercation with a gun and alcohol one night. And it was the woman brandishing the gun. During an emotional outbreak, and he was like, that's it. I'm getting rid of the gun, and I'm getting rid of you. So he got divorced. And tragically, he died in a motorcycle accident. He was taking someone home at night that didn't have a ride, and he gave that person his helmet. It's a shame. He's a nice guy. Now that I've cheered you up,
I shouldn't be laughing, but okay. Back in Tennessee.
I apologize. My mouse has been sticky. I'm trying to shut this off the last few seconds there.
I was having fun. BR549. Yeah.
That is the number to call.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That's the number to call. Yep. Come on down and get you a car.
Heck, it's almost free.
Uh-huh. It is. Bring a gum wrapper with you.
They call it practically free. That's what they do.
Practically
free.
See, this is the time where I don't mind my memory not working. When it comes to like, oh, don't you remember? Hee-haw. Like, yeah, no. I don't know.
It was a fun show. I enjoyed it for a while, for what it was.
It was, what was that? That was Sunday evening.
Yeah,
it was Sunday, wasn't it?
Yeah, that was what ended up replacing the Smothers Brothers when they got fired.
It was like Lawrence Welk and Hee Haw, right? That was the Sunday lineup.
It may have been. I know that they kind of described when they were selling to the network, they didn't understand it, and they said, "Well, it's kind of like a country." They said it's kind of like a country music version of Laughing. That's how they described it.
It kind
of
was, in a way.
That's how they sold it to CBS.
See, to me, it was a musical backdrop for opportunities for musicians to definitely show their wares, as well as some country laughing. Country humor. I wouldn't put it into the caliber of laughing, but
Laughing was
poking.
Similar.
Poking
the style
horse.
Was similar with the popping lat jokes and what have you.
Right.
Yeah, and popping out of the cornfield and over by the fence, and the board picks up and kicks him in the rear end and things like that. Yeah.
Yeah. You met another and he was gone.
That kind of thing.
Yeah. Lappin was actually, for whatever reason, they were kind of politically motivated in some of the directions of their humor, which I didn't see that in Hee Haw.
No.
So Hee Haw was more comedy
variety. Political humor does two things to you. One, it limits you in a couple of ways.
Yes.
And one way is that you can't repeat it very many years down the road because it really doesn't mean anything. When we did our weekly weekly Weirdness Radio show, we a lot of times included some politics in there here and there. Matter of fact, there was one point we did our own debate between Jimmy Carter and Ted Kennedy, and my brother was a moderator. How was Jimmy Carter? And Tim was that he was Ted J. Kennedy. And, you know, the thing is, it's very funny to hear, but it doesn't really mean a whole lot, you know,
because if you don't follow
politics, you wouldn't have known, you know, that Teddy said he was going to run against Carter, and he did in the primaries, and Carter said he was going to kick his ass, and so Ted Kennedy went over and protected his donkey and, you know, that kind of a thing. But, it becomes so outdated. I did one thing that was really outdated on Weirdness Really Bad. It was just a really strange idea I had. And you know how they always throw up film, you know, when they're doing news, they throw up film of somebody that had been there or that had kind of done a report. So they kind of announced to do that. Well, I did it, and I had access to this barbershop quartet. So after a news story, barbershop quartet would waltz through there singing a part of a song. And it was okay, but it was all kind of time. I mean, for one thing, it was right about the time that Obama had just taken office. And there were some talks about that, about Rob, what's his name, out of Chicago, the governor who got sent to jail for trying to sell the Senate seat. But all these things don't mean anything today. So when I went to put an archive, I took that out and put something else in its place. So it actually was only ever seen one time.
Yeah. The only other drawback to political humor is it immediately cuts off, let's just say if it was 50-50, half of your audience.
Yeah.
Half of them are not going to appreciate it.
Well, more so today, I think, Gar, than in the past.
Because, yeah, that's true.
Political comedy used to be more good-natured, where now it's bitter and stinging.
Now,
whichever side is doing it, it doesn't matter. Both sides
are
absolutely vicious.
It's a mean thing now.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
But you're definitely going to ostracize some aspect of what could be your listening or viewing audience by using that. It was one of the Johnson maybe that said, you know, if we lose Walter Cronkite, then we've lost the war.
Yeah, that's when he pulled out of the race for reelection. Yeah,
and you know that a lot of the country was getting behind different things back then, but you know, back in the 60s and 70s. Yes, very much a different climate, and not as dagger in the back. I don't think. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong. There was
I don't know. Maybe it's louder now.
Could be. I saw there's a Monkees version of Pat Paulson.
Paulson. That's awesome.
Run for president. He's a department head of some part of the government, and they're the Monkees encounter aliens, UFOs, and Pat Paulson is describing this, and it is just so funny. But then again, I mean, you know, you have to understand the whole Pat Paulson thing.
Yeah.
Such a hilarious entertainer.
Oh, such a great deadpan. He had such a great deadpan.
He was. You know, only person I've ever seen come near what he does would be Stephen Wright.
Yes.
Oh, I was thinking, what was it? Who was that guy in the black and white films, and he was running up and down mountains and getting chased by boulders?
Buster Keaton. But he wasn't a stand-up comic.
No, he was a running comic.
Yeah, he was.
No, he was.
At times,
but he was very deadpan.
Deadpan.
And he was on. They even brought him on Laugh-In a few times, I think.
He was still very active late in life.
Yeah, he was doing gasoline commercials. He was doing all kinds of stuff. I think he was on
Beach
Boys.
The Beach Boys.
That was in the 50s. I didn't know that he was still around for Laugh-In.
I could be wrong, but I thought, you know, he was on there for like, you know, they would give him two words, and he would say, you know, something.
Sock it to me.
Yeah.
Something
yeah,
like that.
See, he would be perfect for sock it to me, you know, or yeah, he would definitely be.
Hey, if Nixon can do it.
Exactly. Yeah. Sock it to me.
I know. It was more like a question.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm the president. Sock it to me. Yeah, that guy.
Yeah. Well, he got it socked all right. Yeah.
Yeah, well, he fouled up good, didn't he?
Yeah. But it was good to see. Now I forgot his name. It's not Yul Brynner.
Yul Gibbons.
Yul Gibbons. Yeah. He's a bird. He's a plane. No, I forgot his name. The black and white guy, silent star.
Buster Keaton.
Buster Keaton. There we go. Thanks. See, it just went right away. Dave, I am not kidding. I could not say Horror Host Hall of Fame last week to save my giblets. It just wasn't.
Whoa.
I was like,
"Watch your giblets
was,
now."
I know it was just the thing.
You know, we don't have to save giblets. We just have to warm them up, right?
Well, yeah, right next. Yeah, sure.
Get out the ranch. Woohoo!
But yeah,
it's better than having
it. It wasn't on my rundown notes, so I couldn't say it. I was like, and like I said, Fogsbane and Dave filled me in. Thankfully, I was struggling.
Fogsbane is a good guy. He's a good guy.
He's an awesome guy.
Always. I've talked with him on the phone as well as you guys.
As well as us, or better than us?
Yeah, about as equal as you.
I don't know, but I would like it. I would like it if fate would have it such that all of us could get together sometime.
You know, one of these days.
It'd be great if days, we could get together with listeners, too. They're awesome people.
Well, you know, we're going to be next in 2022. There will be two events coming up. There will not be a Gullardi Fest in 2021. They just are not able to ensure that he has the sponsors in order to ensure that he can cover costs. So in 2022, Gullardi Fest will be back, as will in Akron, the Monster Fest Mania returns.
Yes. I can't wait. Mm. That's more for me. I mean, we have other horror venues here in Cleveland, but they're rough around the edges. And I don't mean that in a negative way. There's definitely people who like the guts and spleens and everything. But Monster Fest Mania had more of a focus on your classic monsters. I mean, you had a few tables peddling guts and spleens, but most of what was going on, wouldn't you say, Dave, was more geared towards the classic monsters?
It was, indeed.
Sounds like a bring your own bucket type of affair there. Guts and spleens, huh?
Yeah. Guts and spleens, that's how I describe it.
Guts and spleens, bring your own bucket. That's
the old slasher films, you know. I mean, I can enjoy one here and there, but a steady diet, can't do it. Can't do it. You can only handle so many guts and so many spleens in life.
Unless you have ranch dressing.
Well, yeah, ranch and ice cream.
Yeah.
It masks everything.
Especially that Moose Tracks ice cream.
Yes. Oh, yes, Moose Tracks.
You know, Dale, I think Giant Eagle even has a sugar-free ice cream, Moose Tracks ice cream.
They do. They do. I think CW or somebody confirmed it in the chat while we were chatting away.
But yeah.
I'm scheming tomorrow's ad. Mwah. Just not sure what I'm going to do with it. I have material. Not sure what I'm going to do with it. Got to work the Erie House stuff into it. Dave got,
there you go.
Gar got bumped. Aw.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
Oh, well.
He just said something in the Facebooky chat.
Oh, I heard it. I heard it beef on me.
Yeah.
Yep, there it goes. Well, you know,
since they're trying to ditch us and it's getting a little late.
Yeah, I was going to say maybe out of all fairness and since we don't have as much coffee as he had, we should bring in the one, the only, James Durante to signal off, and I'll see you tomorrow night at 6:30, buddy.
It's a date, big fella. Where the hell is Jimmy Durante hiding? Stupid mouse.
Good night.
Good night.
It's time to say goodnight. Good night. What more to say but good night? We've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo. Arrivo, up we the same, and ink-a-tink-a-doo. Good night. Good night. Good night, folks. And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
Come back, Shane! Come back!